everyone. It's Henry, Mike, and Jeff of the Decentralists. And welcome to our latest hot topic. And, well, this week, we've got a bit of a controversial one. We've got a question, and that is, was Russia somehow involved or behind the terrible October 7th Hamas attack in Israel? So, Michael, you've been in Kyiv for over a year now. Why don't you start us off?
Well, Henry, I think that we can end this pod. This could be the shortest podcast ever, and you know, at 5 seconds, because the answer is yes. Now, can I authoritatively, right, with actual evidence and you know all of this kind of stuff, stand up and say that you know kind of Russia is behind this kind of latest escalation or this you know this kind of a, because it's a frozen conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hamas has been kind of, you know, firing a couple of rockets here and there, you know, these guys get, you know, because you think about it, it's a completely enclosed enclave, right? So they'll fire like two rockets. You know, they're probably making them out of cardboard and whatever tubes they got left, right? Because I'm sure that the, you know, the Israelis who control all of the stuff going in and out of Gaza are not allowed. They're like, oh, this one's rocket parts. No problem.
Yeah, of course.
But October 7 was different, right? I mean, October 7, you know, the Israelis have got this air defense system. It's called the Iron Dome,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's like supposedly the most sophisticated air defense system, probably outside of Kyiv right now, because the air defense system here is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on October 7th, which maybe coincidentally is Putin's birthday.
Oh, really?
So on October 7th, Hamas goes from being this, you know, I mean, let's face it, right? Any of us who watch the news or, you know, read magazines or newspapers, right? I mean, you kind of figure Hamas is kind of like this, you know, ragtag group of you know, agitators.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, 5,000 rockets.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Right? 5,000. So it doesn't matter whether your dome is iron or diamond or whatever. Rockets are getting through.
Yeah.
Right. And as part of the challenge has also been with this kind of, you know, the Israelis have been, you know, looking the other way when it comes to settlers just going in and setting up houses in the middle of, you know, basically what is quote unquote Palestinian territory.
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is creating more targets.
Right.
It's something that happens in Ukraine. Right. The air defense sirens will go off the moment they detect a plane leaving the ground. Right. Or some kind of launch. Well, you know, in Ukraine, Kyiv is pretty much covered. Like it's, you know, there's Patriot, there's all these other air defense systems. Not much gets through. Right. The other day was the biggest drone attack in Kyiv. It was 2 weeks ago, and it was 75 drones at the same time, and they shot them all down.
Wow.
Shot them all down.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was the biggest attack in one day, and they shot them all down. And then a couple days later, they fired like seven of these caliber, hypersonic, you can't catch me if you can type of missiles,
mm-hmm.
and they shot them all down. Patriot took them all down. So, you know, when you've got these smaller quantities, which is kind of like a, you know, you figure it's an annoyance type of thing. You end up with this scenario where, you know, the air defense can take care of it. This was clearly somehow Hamas went from having two or three rockets a month to having 5,000 on hand.
Yeah.
For one day. Right. And they went from having, you know, a couple hundred guys and girls running around with like rocks to having like 30,000 trained soldiers. How does this happen without the involvement of a major military power? That's basically my thought.
Uh-huh.
Those are great points, Mike, but I might add that you're not just making this up as you hunker in the basement listening to the air raid siren sound. I mean, there is, as you said, it hasn't been proven, but there's credible evidence from other other sources that this is happening, you know, news reporting from Al Jazeera, articles in the Washington Post, The Hill, which is fairly reputable reporter on what's going on Capitol Hill. So it isn't just that, gee, this is what we think is happening. Mm-hmm. There is a pretty strong, there's a pretty strong assortment of evidence, circumstantial perhaps, but evidence nonetheless amongst the international community that this is indeed what's happening.
Okay, let's just say it's circumstantial evidence, but what kind of stuff are they finding?
One of the things that I've seen reported, right, is I've seen these scenes of the three, there's three guys that are the leaders of Hamas, like the founders. Mm-hmm. And they're on a private jet, wearing gold Rolexes.
Yeah, yeah.
On their way to like Qatar or someplace like this, which is basically the money pot for all of these guys, right? And the estimates are that these three guys are worth $11 billion. My understanding of the way that it works is the main funnel of money in for all of these terrorist groups from Iran to all these places is Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Oh. Okay.
Right. And those guys have been around forever. And so the idea is that what you have is you have money, but more importantly, you have, let's say equipment, right? Because it's not like you can, if you're a billionaire, like maybe Elon Musk, I don't know, can this guy just walk out and say, I want to buy myself an Apache attack helicopter? Like, will they sell it to him? Probably not, legitimately. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if he goes to some weird market in the middle of the hills in Nepal or someplace like this, he can probably buy himself one. Right. So the bigger thing is where are these things coming from? So you have Putin, who, when he starts the war in Ukraine, it's not even conjecture anymore. They're shooting down drones that have got Iranian writing all over them.
Oh, of course.
Right. They're shooting down Iranian drones. And then the other day, when I made my mistake, it was not caliber missiles; it was ballistic missiles. So these are they. Remember their reports? I'm sure you've seen them. First, it was the Iranians were selling the Russians the drones, and then they were selling them ballistic missiles.
Oh,
right. And ballistic is in the ground, in a tube, or in one of those trucks, like the stuff that delivers nuclear payloads. Right. So this stuff is so fast. Like it was literally the other day I heard the Patriot battery go off, knocking these ballistic missiles out of the air before the air raid siren went off because they're that fast.
Wow.
And so how can this all be a coincidence? Right. You've got Russia involved in a protracted war in Ukraine that's not going their way. Right. And it's we're approaching a frozen conflict, both literally and figuratively, because it's winter now. And big surprise, some other hot spot in the world flames up and everybody's attention, you know, this piece of our brain that says, how am I getting my war fixed today? Switches from Ukraine to Gaza.
And that, I think, is perhaps the most critical piece. There is certainly evidence about money moving around and where did these missiles come from. The connections between the Palestinian Authority and first the Soviet Union and then Russia, that goes back 50 years, probably to the, you know, probably not quite to the Yom Kippur War, but, you know, but almost. So you have all of these bigger picture geopolitical considerations. And I would argue the biggest geopolitical consideration is that Putin, and perhaps to a lesser degree China, but really Putin, is a chaos agent. Mm-hmm. Really what he wants to see
100%.
You know, is to use that word again, chaos and distraction. He wants to fracture NATO. He wants to fracture the Western allies. He wants to see the ascendancy of China. All of these things are actions that distract from, you know, from what he is doing in Ukraine.
He wants to mess up elections too, and he does.
And, you know, and the Wagner Group, despite what recently happened to their leader, is still fighting proxy wars for Russia in Africa and all of not even proxy wars, just wars for Russia and Africa. So, you know, I think all of that is, you know, is the icing that is on top of this, where exactly as you say, if he can get, you know, if he can get the nation's, well, not the nation, the world's focus on the Palestinians, then, and away from him, then, you know, then that makes things much easier for him. You know, the fact that he is engaged in atrocities in the Ukraine, if suddenly the West ally is bombing kids in, you know, in Palestinian kids, then not intentionally, unlike Putin, who is intentionally bombing at Ukrainian kids, but nevertheless, you know, suddenly he can say, you know, the whataboutism can
exactly
can go very strong here. So you can see why that would be very much in his interest. And then the other objective that he has is he really, I think, needs to get Donald Trump reelected president. Because if Trump is president, you know, the funding for Ukraine, I mean, it's already possibly going to dry up, but it's definitely going to dry up once Trump is, if Trump, God help us, if Trump becomes president. And, you know, and so again, any chaos that he can sow that will, you know, that will lead to the possible election of Trump is also an objective for his. And I guess the final piece of the, well, not the final, but another piece of the calculation that we should consider, and you touched on this briefly, Mike, is Iran. In the summer of 2015, the Obama administration signed the JCPOA with Iran, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. And basically, this was known as the Iran deal or the Iran nuclear deal, which caused Iran to basically shut down their nuclear weapons program in exchange for the unfreezing of some assets and a number of other concessions. They'd allowed inspectors in and so on and so forth.
Right.
And you might say, well, what does that have to do with anything? There's no nukes here. But what, you know, once Trump came into office, he tore up the JCPOA and basically put the sanctions back in place and so on. And what the JCPOA was doing, in addition, you know, the big picture was the nuclear deal, but the smaller picture was basically trying to bring Iran back into, you know, bring Iran part of the international family of nations.
Yeah, responsible country.
You know, make them more responsible, make them more open. It was kind of the first step towards, you know, towards much like you're seeing with other nations in the Middle East to normalizing relations, and Trump and his administration threw that all out the window. So, you know, that would in turn, you know, incentivize Iran to help Hamas with their attacks as well. So that whole connection between, you know, Iran, Russia, and Trump tearing up the nuclear deal is, you know, something that has to be considered as well.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And don't forget, Trump is a big fan of Putin's. He looks at him as a successful strong man, and I think that's how what Trump wants to be as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's face it, right? Putin has written the rule book.
Yeah.
And he's willing to share it. You know, he's for people who want to be a Putin, right? For anybody who believes that they whether it's, you know, kind of rational belief or psychotic belief or sociopathic belief, but any of these, anybody who gets into power someplace, like an African dictator, Trump, any of these guys, and the idea is you want to be there forever because you think you're the best and you just want the power and you want to do whatever you want. Putin's written the playbook.
Yeah.
He's the poster boy, right? You know, let's not be mistaken, right? You know, when they talk about things like the weapons being donated to Ukraine to fight the war, One of the reasons behind it being so, it's taking so long, you know, they're like, how long is it taking to get air defense, or how long does it take to get HIMARS, or how long does it take to get this stuff, is because the Americans are worried about this stuff being captured by a rush, by the Russians.
Absolutely.
Right? And so, so for them, things like military technology, right, the blueprints for missiles and for, you know, ships and for all this stuff is like literally the most secret stuff that you can have. It's like the, it's like the formula for Kentucky Fried Chicken or Coca-Cola.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And for the Russians, they don't care. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you noticed the other day, they had a test, the North Koreans, who have been, you know, supplying Russia with artillery shells, yep, and stuff like this. Apparently they go about 8 feet and then blow up. But, you know, they've been supplying them with artillery shells and with, you know, system, like weapons, because they're all based on Russian plans anyway. Mm-hmm. They launched the longest range ballistic missile test they've ever done. North Korea.
Yeah.
Like 3 days ago. Yeah. Is that a coincidence?
Yeah. No, no.
Hell no.
Absolutely not.
You know what I mean? So Putin will walk in, he'll be like, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here's my playbook for being a dictator, yada, yada, yada. Oh, and by the way, what do you want?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I need some chaos all over the world. I need some artillery shells. I need whatever. Oh, you want the plans for a freaking nuclear submarine? No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Question for you or for Jeff. Is there a history of, I don't know, a good relationship or collusion between Russia and Hamas?
It's like what Mike said at the top. It is, you know, it's all circumstantial, but, you know, but the circumstances are, you know, the circumstances are pretty strong, right? As I said earlier, yeah, there's a long history of a relationship between the Palestinian Authority and the Soviet Union that continued on when the Soviet Union became Russia. Mahmoud Abbas, I think, got his PhD at a Russian university. So that, you know, and with Israel being such a strong ally of the West for decades, it would only make sense that, you know, the Palestinians look for someone to align themselves with, and Russia would be there.
Yes.
Now, to be clear, I'll speak for myself here. You know, I am a supporter of the two-state solution. I believe the Palestinian people have, you know, have a right to live.
100%.
That is sort of unequivocal. But that being just in the same way, Cuba has turned to the Soviet Union when no one else would help them. It's not a great surprise that the Palestinians turned to the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
You know, so yes, there is a history there. I think what the difference is now is, you know, we're, sorry to admit to our younger listeners, you know, we're all old enough to remember when the Soviet Union was around. And, you know, while they were terrible, they were not that interested in gross instability and chaos, because they sort of,
that's true,
they sort of saw that, you know, they sort of saw that that harmed them as much as it harmed everyone else, right? Whereas today, that piece of the equation is gone. So that's where the relationship between, you know, Russia and, you know, these corrupt Palestinians flying on corporate jets with gold Rolexes are, that's where it's kind of coming off the rails.
I couldn't agree more. And I think just, you know, I mean, a couple of points to add on to this, right, is that think of what you've got right now if you're Putin, okay? You're a global pariah.
Mm-hmm.
Out of 198 countries or something like this on the planet, you are persona non grata in like 180 of them. Okay. But what you've also got is, so you're persona non grata, you've got an arrest warrant out for all this, for stealing children, all this other kind of stuff. And was, I think about a week ago, the Hamas guys went to Moscow because he's now offering to broker peace with Israel.
Oh boy.
Right? So, you know, think of it. You start the conflict. And now basically the only way it ends is for the West to actually go to Putin's doorstep and say, "Can we please negotiate the end of this Hamas-Israel conflict?" I mean, this is the kind of stuff where I think this is the frustration that the other kind of former Eastern European countries, right? Like the Polands, the Lithuanias, the Latvias, the Estonias, the Czechs, all of these folks, they're like, you guys have no idea yep. who this human is. You have no idea
he's not
how
human.
He plays these games. He's freaking 9 steps ahead of you.
It's true.
In this thing, and he doesn't care about human rights. He doesn't care about how many people die. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even if they're his own people.
That's true.
I mean, how do you like that? He did one of his 4-hour press conferences the other day, and apparently he said he's totally fine if 100,000 Russians die every year for the next 10 years fighting in Ukraine.
Oh yeah.
I mean, what do you do if you're that human? What do you do if you're a Russian?
It's like Syria.
No, but what do you do? How do you sit there? Oh, there's Justin Trudeau, and he's totally fine if 100,000 Canadians die every year. In I don't care of what. Oh, great! I'm going to vote for that guy. I mean, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. Well.
Okay. And so now, what this thing has done, like it just cannot be a coincidence, right? It cannot be a coincidence. And I guarantee you, what you will see is you will see within the next couple of weeks, right, as the pressure grows on, mounts on Israel to stop the war, right? You will see a notice that will say, if you want to end this war, all roads to negotiation with Hamas to end this war end in Moscow.
Oh, man. I certainly wouldn't want to see that. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, that's all spot on. I would say the other piece of the calculation is that America is so much more complicated in terms of its polarization now than it was 50 years ago. 50 years ago, Walter
Cronkite. 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, true, but really, I mean, I'm terrible. I feel terrible to admit this to you, Henry, but 10 years ago was 2014. Almost 2014. But, you know, if you go back 50 years, Walter Cronkite would have been on the evening news. He would have sort of been the calm voice to America. He would have said, these guys are our enemies and they oppose freedom and this is what we're doing. And, you know, America 50 years ago or Canada 50 years ago was far from perfect, but it was not the divided nation that it is today, thanks to the likes of Tucker Carlson and all of these loudmouths
and
who
social media, but that's a whole 100 other podcasts.
Yeah. And all these, 100,000 other podcasts shouting into the microphone where explaining to the American people, you know, Mike was saying, you know, the complexities of peace negotiations in Moscow and what that means and what America has to do and all of that, like explaining that to the American people, because that's really us to understand it. It's very difficult and it's mm-hmm. almost impossible to reach them all. And it's, you know, and the New York Times can publish a 2-page spread with photos and so on. And all the people that already believed it will read it and understand it, but nobody else who needs to be convinced will
terrible.
Read it and understand it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is the other challenge. And that's what I said at the top about Putin being this chaos agent where he can just throw out some tweets or X's or posts or whatever Musk calls them this week, and they'll just all go viral and it'll all just unravel further. So he's still calling the Ukrainians Nazis.
I know.
And when but again, that's, you know, that's further chaos where it's like, you know, where obviously that word Nazi and Israel and the Jewish people and Zionism, I mean, it's just
absolutely,
it's just the worst kind of greasy alphabet soup you could ever try to eat. So, so yeah, it's again, evidence is circumstantial, but that evidence is pretty strong.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. It's kind of a scary topic, but I think we have to accept reality, and I hope our leaders do too, so they can truly figure out how to stop this menace.
Because I will literally barf in my mouth if I have to do a podcast about Donald Trump and Putin shaking hands about peace in Ukraine and in
Gaza. No. I don't even want to hear you say that.
The peace breakers, the peacemakers. Could you imagine? Here we go. Nobel Prize.
Oh yeah, stop it.
Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin.
As Putin kills hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians. Okay.
What a freaking joke. That wouldn't surprise me though.
If that happens, I'm moving into my garden shed.
If that happens, I'm getting on Elon's like boat to Mars or whatever it is. I'm done.
Ouch. Okay, guys.
All right. Well, you stay safe out there, Mike.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And happy holidays and Merry Christmas to all of our listeners.
Yes. Whatever you're celebrating, have a fantastic time. And thank you, Jeff. And thank you, Mike.